And I'll just address humility as well. That I think it's easy for me to get highfalutin and think that I know something. And it's really quite preposterous. Because what I'm doing here with you is talking about some of the things at the edges of my capability. It feels very much similar to in practice. It's always a practice, it seems, of going up to where's the edge of what I'm actually capable of doing today, and just exploring that edge a little bit. So I'll just address both of those things out of the gate, and hopefully that'll help focus my mind to not get too far afield. And then the other thing, so then you've said a number of times you've referred to structure. Mm-hmm. You did it again in class
today. In class today, yeah.
And the necessity of that. And in the first time we sat down and did this, we wandered all over. And I think that that's unavoidable to yeah. some degree, because it is exploring that edge of what is known,
mm-hmm.
trying to suss out what's next, what's possible here, what is the creative move here. That said, you also said something in class this morning that I thought was, well, it stood out to me, and that was when we went into child pose, you said something about the earth, you know, that we come from and that we return mm-hmm. to. And last time we sat down and talked, I kind of laid out, okay, this is where I am in life. This is what this body is, this mind, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
It's this midlife, and there's a change, feels very much like a change in orientation of what this life, what it thinks it's doing, what the local player feels like it thinks and believes it's doing. There's a reorientation going on. And this is like, I'm coming to you mm-hmm. ostensibly as a teacher to guide some of that. So the natural structure, we talked a little bit about how the narrative structure of cognition seems unavoidable. Like it's not a negotiable thing. I experience my day-to-day life in story form.
Yeah.
There's natural beginnings, middles, and ends. There's, yeah. So
you can tame it and train it, and change it, but it's unavoidable. Therefore, it's always be there.
It's there. Yeah, it's necessary somehow. I think we talked a little bit about that. I won't try to relitigate that now. But what I'll say is the obvious one is my death.
Yeah.
Okay. So from the earth
to the
earth. Do something and then to the earth. So there's a natural structure there. There's mm-hmm. a natural line, and it's easy to, it's a bit startling to do, but I've been doing it a bit lately in part because of things going on in my family. And I think part just naturally I'm a garden variety human being here. And I think probably at this point in the journey, so to speak, you start to have these thoughts. And it's not that I haven't had them before, it's just they're more in the fore. It's yeah. like, okay, so I think about things like actuarial tables and like, okay, what are the odds here? Odds are, I heard something this past week, there was some study about how long men live and how the Icelandic men, I think, are the ones that live. Like there's some anomaly there. Like they mm-hmm. live quite a bit longer than everybody else. Anyway, and that number was 81 or 82. So
yeah.
If I'm 51 and that's better than average, so I'm more than halfway through, odds are. You know, I'm also looking at my dad, who's I think 88, 89, and he's doing okay.
Yeah.
So anyway, nonetheless, you know, you can put error bars on it. You can say probably this is what I got to work with. And it's a very sobering thought process to go through and say, okay, well, what am I doing with my life? What am I attending to? Is this what I want to be doing? Is this what I'm for? It's probably a better way. So I think if you got anything to pick up on there, I'd ask you to, otherwise I'll carry on.
Well, I just want to thank you for bringing up death because our society and our current culture has a very unhealthy relationship with it. That is, we just simply don't talk about it. But it was this really sweet sitcom that I watched with my husband. I think it was on Netflix, The Good Place. I don't know if you watched it. Yeah. But the great thing is that, and then, you know, it goes into philosophy and Eastern and Western philosophy. And at the end, what happens is that it is death that gives meaning to life, right? A life without death is an endless wandering into hedonic self-fulfillment, which is unavoidably unfulfilling, right? So it is an interesting concept that we don't embrace enough because we make it bad or not something that we want to talk about. But embracing the fact that this life is finite actually makes every moment just so much more precious. And like you expressed, sometimes it takes us into the midlife to actually recognize that, oh, this is, I better shape up. I shouldn't spend that next day in the couch doing nothing because, you know.
Well.
Because there's a purpose here.
Yeah, right.
And I think it is that we were created onto this world to fulfill a purpose, and hopefully that purpose is to make us more peaceful and you know, somehow constructive towards the universe. And it's a good experiment, and don't screw it up kind of thing.
Yeah, or go ahead, because it seems like nature will just do it again.
Yeah.
It's kind of, that is another thing that's, it becomes a nihilistic train of thought if I'm not careful. But I think about the image that's coming to mind right now is the baby turtles trying to make it off across, mm-hmm. across the beach, you know, to the water to catch. And most of them get picked up. And that seems to be nature's way. It's like, we're just going to throw a whole bunch of iterations at the problem. The problem,
yeah.
My word, it's not really a problem, I don't think. I think it's more along the lines of a creative enterprise. It's how
I'm
more inclined to think about it. And when you say productive, I guess I turn that into creative.
Yeah.
It's like there's productive, yeah, in service to what? It's something like in service to just, I don't know. That's probably another
whole conversation.
It's suffice it to say that, yes, it does feel to me that there is a purpose, and it seems to have something to do with participating in the creation. Now, you talked about just sitting on the couch. That doesn't feel to me like that's not my story. Like, that's not how my life has been. My life has been very purposeful, I'll say. What is changing is something like the point of focus. It feels like, because a lot of the motivation, I think, is necessary. So the same way, so to build a structure, there's a structure, every structure affords, well, a living structure affords some increment of creation. The structure, I have to have the structure first. So I think about house that affords an awful lot of not having to worry about a whole bunch of things. It's a structure, it's a place to be. It took a lot of work to get that, it took a lot of focused attention to get that, and it feels as though it's something like there's a material base that's appropriate, necessary. In the body, skeletal structure, you know, the whole organism's got a physical base to it. But then there's also this tendency to overshoot the mark.
Yeah.
It's like, okay, I get into this pattern of manifesting that material base and get really good at it. And I think human beings, you know, the animal, the species has gotten really good at cooperating in pursuit of material needs.
Yeah.
And it's like, you went way past the mark. is how it's, well, that's how I feel right now. It's like, on the one hand, I love the exquisite motorcycle, you know, like there's this just feat of engineering that is utterly decadent. But there's a joyful artfulness. There's something right there. But then there's also the collateral damage, so to speak, that goes along with that particular piece of excellence. So it's like, okay, I'm at this point, for me personally, it feels like where you're this typhoon, and it's like, okay, the structure's there. Stop all the excess.
Yeah.
And just strip away to what is the pure, what is the core? What was all that for?
Yeah, well, you're building bigger and bigger houses to live in. You never go into the fifth bedroom. You know, at least in the motorcycle of excellence, you get on your motorcycle, and I see you get on your motorcycle after yoga class, and you just thoroughly enjoy the process. But every piece of that motorcycle is enjoyed. I think if we engage with the material that we build and we thoroughly enjoy it, that's different. You have a big garden, or even if you have a larger house, but you somehow, every nooks and crevice is being used and enjoyed. It's when it's large and excess, and it's actually becoming burdensome and not used. No?
Yeah. So what I would like to do is take that. So I want to build up off of this. I want to see if I could speak in complete sentences. I'd like to reason from first principles,
mm-hmm.
build from what you and I can maybe come to as a firm foundation and agree upon and say, okay, this is actually necessary. This okay. is enough. So I would take that little discussion that we just had, and I would go right back into, you know, the practice here.
Okay.
We've talked a little bit about this little tiny rectangular space
mm-hmm.
that we put ourselves in, that I put myself in. And the purpose in that space, you just said every little piece is a joy.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, okay, there's already this astonishing structure here. I can't explain it. Like it's miraculous. And how do I enjoy it? Like, notice all of the little aches and pains and the grotesque limitations to mobility that are just obviously wrong.
Why?
Yeah, why are they wrong? What, how did that happen? There was an interesting, I don't think it was on camera last time, but somewhere along the line, I asked you about the comfort crisis, and that's something that's in the mainstream. I think it's a New York Times
bestseller. Yeah.
And they talk about the condition of our fellows here, myself included, as exhibiting, what do they call it? Dysfunction. It's like diseases of captivity is how they describe it. It's like if you take an animal and you put it in captivity, it starts to have certain, it starts to manifest certain maladies.
Yeah.
And that's, I mentioned also that I feel like I come in here and I have this strong intuition that probably a lot of the discomfort, the dysfunction mm-hmm. that I feel has to do with what I eat.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, walk around the corner over here at Costco and it's ridiculous. It's like I can have something that would never be available to any of my ancestors.
Yeah.
Times a couple thousand. It's like, whatever you want, mix it all up, put it all together. It's like, try this, try that. I think the organism just, it's like, oh my God,
yeah.
What are you doing?
We're struggling. We're an addictive society. Everything that we do is addiction, and we demand absolute, like the comfort crisis. It's like we demand absolute happiness, joy, and comfort. And anything that's uncomfortable now is labeled as somehow needing to be fixed. Versus really, I mean, everything is uncomfortable if you're going to make progress. You know, you have to really push against the grain. Any athlete knows that. Anybody who tries to get in shape, it's like at first you're like, oh man, But motion is the lotion, and the more you move it, the more all of a sudden it's like, no, actually, I'm starting to feel better. This feels better. And then the edge moves out. But I think our tolerance for discomfort and our demand for being taken care of perfectly is just no longer realistic. It actually just feeds a more and more addictive beast towards food that no longer nourishes, behavior that is not normal and cannot tolerate. You know, now we're confusing emotional pain with physical pain. Yeah. We just have this complete lack of awareness of grit and substance to actually go out and be vital. I think yoga is wonderful teaching how to kind of lean into the discomfort. This is the only way to bring back balance, is lean into the discomfort.
So that speaks to the change of focus. Yeah. That I was referring to. Because you just said in the athletic context, you have to push against the grain. You use the metaphor. It actually is hard work. You actually have to push. And that's what I say for the early part of my life. And I think it's natural for the material means. It's like, you gotta go push. You gotta actually put water, shelter, food, put that together. It's some work. But then again, it's like missing the mark there, like going way past that, has to do with a failure to focus properly. It's kind of how I am inclined to think about it now. So, and it's so I think I've made that point. It's like there's just notice where the edge of the discomfort is. It's, notice that there are distinctions. You just made the distinction between emotional and physical discomfort. We're conflating those things. That to me, again, it's like if, when I wake up in the morning, my vision is blurry and it takes a moment or two, depending on how fast I'm moving, to bring the trees into focus, notice where I'm located. And it's that same kind of practice here. It's like, just first of all, just notice, just pay attention to what it is that you're actually really pay attention to. It. Don't just go,
and then it turns into something. I think it's asking the question why, right? So when you're studying awareness, it's leaning into the discomfort, but then always asking the what and a why and a how, as opposed to just, you know, because you say you're missing a mark when you're building the basic structure to life, to which we're all responsible to make sure we're taking care of ourselves, right? And so we need to do the work so we can do that in our society. And, but why, right? You miss the mark because now we become addicted to the more I have, the more status I have. But status is an illusion. And if you chase it more and more, that's how you overshoot the mark. But if you keep it in mind that I am doing this so that I can have structure underneath me and then be involved in a more creative way in the process. And I need to reach that in order to be creative, right? That's what the Bhagavad Gita teaches as well, is that first you need structure, and without discipline, there's no freedom. If there's no discipline, there's no freedom. Absolute freedom is anarchy. That's why revolutionaries, I'm like, revolution is great, except it's incredibly bloody and it usually ends up bad. So really what you want when you're looking at your own inner cycle is to really know with awareness how and why you want to engage with the world, and then provide it structure so you can go about that safely.
Yeah.
So not losing track of the why and I think most of us do lose track of the why because we chase, you know, certainty and status and some of the other markers that society puts the addiction carrot on and then moves the carrot further and further away, and then you just keep on grasping after it, you know?
Yes. So What do you think about when I say technology?
I say nothing is good or bad, just thinking makes it so, kind of like Hamlet. I mean, I'm super grateful for technology for doing this. Technology in a way saved my studio. It also killed my studio during COVID. I think technology, I'm so grateful that I take all these university courses. I'm a huge fan of the great courses and wondering them, and I just endlessly can read and learn. And how wonderful is this, that this was not available to us 20 years ago in the 90s, but we also don't know how to use it, right? So we haven't, then there is the side of technology that makes people even more addicted. And I'm incredibly fearful. I'm already fearful that, you know, social media has created our grasping and jealousy and thy shall not, of you're bad, you're wrong, I'm better. I will not even listen to what you have to say because from the first sentence, I disagreed with you. So ban, you know, shame on you, man. And we just don't know how to use this amazing tool. We are actually using it and it's polarizing us more and more, and it's making us, instead of broader, which is what I use technology for, is how do I learn more? It actually makes social media makes us more narrow generally, right? Very few of us use social media to broaden our specter of comfort, because you have to lean into the discomfort to listen to someone you don't agree with, right? And I'm really also afraid with, you know, Facebook turning Meta and wanting to now provide an alternative universe, a virtual reality, that people will just use that as an escape. Oh, I don't want to deal with the responsibilities and the discomforts of my life. Let me just run towards this world. And so I think technology is neither good or bad. We need to learn to tame it and to use it so that it doesn't become a polarizing, harmful force in our life. Instead, it becomes a force through which we get to know each other better.
If I become annoying, the wise just stop.
Oh, I love the wise. Okay.
Why would we want to know each other better?
Because I think we were brought onto this world to find our way back to each other. That's what yoga teaches. And I think every spiritual religion, you're looking at your Bible, Old Testament, New Testament, the Quran, the Hindu Vedic script, any of the indigenous, doesn't matter what spiritual religious doctrine or cultures you look at. Once you peel away the different stories, once you peel away the thing that we get all stuck on in our everyday existence of what differentiates us, if you go into the core of it, it's saying, find peace, you belong to each other. Find peace, you belong to each other. And I think it is our job to figure out how we can belong to each other. And I also think that all spiritual religions, that's what all the mystics and the mysticism teaches, is that really once you peel it back, there's no such thing as an I. You know, we are, where do you differentiate where I stop? So there's the skin, okay, but my thoughts go beyond my skin, my words, the frequency of my speech, the vibrational energy goes beyond. In the 1960s, we were sending messages to the universe to see if someone is speaking back to us. And how did we do that? We did that with music. We sent Mozart and all kinds of poetry out into, it's still traveling through the universe, you know, somewhere in frequencies, touching something, that vibration is touching somebody. And so vibrationally, we're all one. I mean, it, scientifically, physically, Big Bang, you know, happened. We were all one amazing, tight energy. And now it expands out. And guess what? It's going to collapse again. And then it expands out. maybe one of these breath of collapse, right? We're actually going to get it right and not fight as much. But I think that's exactly what we're trying to do, is find our way back to each other. So when I'm listening to you, I get to know myself better. So I'm breaking down artificial barriers, and I'm expanding what I know, what I feel comfortable with, and my knowledge. And therefore, once my knowledge and my discomfort dissipates, who I am changes. Therefore, I change, and that was just because of you. So we're all we're just this beautiful jambalaya that the longer you cook it, the better it tastes, but you cannot separate the flavors out, because if you take the sausage out of the jambalaya, it doesn't taste good anymore. You know? So that's the why.
That's wonderful. You used quite a few metaphors there. There's just a couple things that I just want to say, just to say them.
Okay.
I haven't read Nietzsche. I think he's attributed with saying something to the effect that if you stare into the abyss long enough, it stares back at you. Mm-hmm. And I do notice when I look into the pupils of another person's eyes, it's a black hole. It's just a abyss, it seems. And I do know from my own experience that it's an incredibly frightening and hopeless place to take my attention. If I just go into that, I'm an ignoramus here with respect to that particular man and what he did and provided, but what I think it represents is a real hard look at that. I've heard the phrase on something along the lines of just unbearable aloneness. Mm-hmm. So when you say one, yes, we're all one. That's one. That's an incredibly lonely. Beatles had a song say, "That's a lonely number. That's the loneliest number. One is the loneliest number. One is a very lonely place to be." And I've seriously contemplated that, like really seriously contemplated that. What does that mean to be one? And perhaps I'm, an ignoramus and missing a big piece of that, probably, yeah. But what I do know is that when I have done that, when I have contemplated it, it is such a deep anguish that is felt there. So then I notice that there's all these other people around. Mm-hmm. It's like, actually, no, I'm not alone in that deepest, darkest sense. So then you also use the metaphor of the compression. It's a metaphor of the breath, which is the, yeah, it's respiration. It's the in and out. And so I want to tie that back to the structure of a natural human life. That's an inspiration, and an exhalation, and a cessation. And again, don't know very much. But I've played around, I guess I'll say, with the breath. To notice, and I've read enough things that they kind of point at that point in between the inhalation and the exhalation. Mm-hmm,
the retention and the emptiness.
Yeah, there's an emptiness. And I didn't understand this until this has just happened to me in the last several years. My brother actually turned me on to a practice of breath work, because I've been doing this, I told you before, for pretty much just as a teenager. There's always a focus on the breath, paying attention to how you're breathing. But this is a type of practice where it's just breath, and it's growing the duration of those retentions. And there's something really, really powerful there.
Yeah.
Anyway, so I agree with you. I do think that if there is a purpose, it has something to do with getting to know one another. Which is a curious thing to say, because who we are respectively is constantly changing.
Mm-hmm.
So it's this constant process of discovery that's never seemingly ever fully realized. It's just this, I guess the image that's coming to mind now is the spiral. It is that cosmic, primordial spiral.
So Anthony DeMello said that it's, you know, when relationship comes, that I don't really want you. I don't want the concept of you. You know, that's where relationship get in trouble, when we cling and we, like you mentioned, that we ever always change. And he had this beautiful framing of it, is that the relationships work much better if we think about it as, I enjoy the symphony that we create together right now. And I want to get to know what kind of symphony we can create together. And then that always changes. The tune, the melody can change, but it's not, I don't have you, because you always change. And if I cling on to you, then I'm going to try to demand that you are the same person you were when you're 30 years old, and God knows you're not, right? Hopefully. It's even when we try to remain the same person, it doesn't work out. You know, that comes with a lot of rigidity and a lot of anger when we hold on to that concept. But do you want to say something else? Was there something else in that loop that you want to talk to? Because I want you to finish, and then I want to go back to something that you said, but I do want you to finish.
What I wanted to do is, what I think I wanted to do was come, I asked you about technology, and I wanted to hear what that means to you. And you said in there that we don't know how to use it. And I agree. And I think that we, my species, my whatever, I don't think that we ever, like, that's the thing. Like, we're, that's the creative act. You just created something new that one never was before. And now you got to figure out how to use it.
Hopefully before we kill each other, because we just made each other so angry at each other.
Yeah, so you also mentioned bloody revolution.
Yeah.
And wouldn't it be wonderful to do a bloodless revolution?
That would be good if it's possible.
So there's a melody. There's a natural push and a pull, is what it seems we're alluding to here. And that's that I know.
Yeah.
In my body, from my own experiences with other bodies, that, like, there's a very real push and pull. You talked a little bit about the vibration of the atmosphere. There's some, I forget who it was who said it. I heard it in a documentary about Rumi, I think. But one of the guys who was either one of the poets or one of the guys who was studying the poets, he made this comment that says, the sounds that I am making by vibrating my vocal cords are vibrating the atmosphere and striking the drum in your ears. So don't think that this isn't personal. And you talked about the music. Like, it's interesting that we chose music. It's interesting that we chose the most beautiful thing that we seem to be able to muster as a species. Let's put that out there as the thing. But the I got this sneaky suspicion that it's all going out there all the time.
Oh yeah.
It's like the unresolved.
Yeah.
the disarming also on that is like, that I think is what becomes the sobering realization, maybe to people such as myself at this point in the progression of a natural human life. It's like, oh, it, everything matters by a lot more than I had imagined possible. And even if it's possible, oh, pay attention.
Exactly. Pay attention. And be responsible for it. That goes back to my first thing, like when I said, when we first met, it's like, to me, the definition of the other somebody who can be responsible, right?
Yeah, the definition, you said the definition of an adult, as far as you're concerned, I think is someone who, you said, you included honesty.
Yeah, who can be honest and take responsibility for their action. Yeah.
Your device is saying
that I need to start. I know. I do not want my device to start. No.
Right, system update, preparing to. Well, do you want to?
We're back. As it was pointed out, technology is good. It's even better when you know how to use it.
Yeah. Okay. So thank you. That's beautiful. That's a perfect. Yeah. So back to that observation. So we're right now, where your mind went was social media. So it's the contemporary, it's the new thing. It's the latest thing. I'm going to back way up.
Way back. Oh.
And okay. I'm going to say, so I told you at the beginning, I want to reason up.
From first principles.
And I also want to come to some foundation between, ideally, if we can, I think that it would be helpful. To really establish a foundation. Same way, I'll use the metaphor of the postures in here. It's like, took me years, and I still barely understand like that, but you use the word bandhas, like the parts in here, right in the middle. It's like, and there's a dearth of nerve endings in there, so it's difficult to feel, and it's like, oh, that you have to get. It's now ready to hear success. Is it running?
It's running. Okay. It's good.
Okay. So the foundation. So the foundation. So foundational. This is a foundational idea, I'll say, with respect to technology. And you just read Heather and Brett's book, and they talk quite a bit about this, the novelty that technology brings.
And brings constant new novelty, which is the hard part, because we don't have a chance to get used to it, right? We don't have a chance to get better at it. It's the rate of change has become so fast that from an evolutionary perspective, we now cannot adapt well enough.
Yeah, and I guess what I want to do here, and forgive me if argumentation is not the right form, but what I want to argue is that that's always been the case.
Okay.
I want to say, and here's kind of my rough line of thinking. So just the most rudimentary tools, what we think happened with Neanderthals and whatever we are. Like there was a development of technology that was throwing weapons. There's this new technology that I have it and I can now impose my will on another people, other people. So we were just talking about how our purpose here probably is to know one another in a some sort of creative enterprise. And at the same time, I noticed that there's an awful lot of just, nope, you're gone because I can. Largely as a consequence of the technology available to me, which I think has always probably been there. The technology, whatever it is so far in pursuit of that basic material needs. So like I'm trying to get better and better and better at just taking care of that part of this, that level of this. And it's really only been fairly recently in evolutionary terms that there's been enough of that, enough of it that actually have it go unconscious. Like I don't, that's what I said that before, last time we spoke, where I don't have to think about most of my day. And most of the problems are solved for me. I'm not even thinking about, I'm barely thinking about what I'm eating. It's like, you know, that's not quite true. I do say a lot.
Yeah, but I know what.
But it's just the utter abundance is just there. Like I don't have to solve that problem anymore. Gratefully, at the same time, that represents an enormous power, largely due to my access to technology, my ancestors' access to technology, that I have not yet become as a species wise with. So it's just been, I think, this is what I'm, this is my idea, so let's see what you think. But to become wise at a planetary scale, first of all, it didn't need to be a thing until just recently. There haven't been enough people around, hardly. So at a planetary scale now, what we're the technology has to do with, the technology of how my own processes of cognition work. Because now I actually have to solve a harder problem. I actually genuinely have to figure out how to, first of all, just get along with you. And then we can explore how do we know each other in that creative way. And I'm not saying that that hasn't ever been present. There's been some piece of that probably in all cultures for all time. However, we're talking plain vanilla, everybody now.
Well, you pointed out two things that I want to go back on, and then I want to go way back on it to a foundation of what I heard. And I think that will be a nice closure that we can continue on in 2 weeks. The one thing I have to say is that, yes, there has been always something along that given us, you know, that next evolutionary challenge. Agriculture was a big one, right? So from going from hunter-gatherer to agriculture. And the point that I would make is I agree with you that it's always been there, but I actually disagree with you because we never solved it. We haven't even solved our adaptation to a peaceful coexistence with agriculture. We took agriculture, and agriculture created most of the problems that we're still dealing with. Because agriculture allowed us to hoard and to, you know, to basically, okay, now you have this grain that's completely not nutritious, but it will sustain you so you don't have to hunt and gather all the time. But it provided all this class structure and richness and poorness and so forth and nationalities and everything else that further separated us, right? So we haven't even figured out how to live with agriculture peacefully. I mean, look at the Ukraine crisis. One of the biggest problems is that we're not getting grain to Africa. We're still grasping to find solution to that. And now, you know, since the 2000 or since 6000 BC, when the Fertile Crescent first started developing grain agriculture, and it independently developed in the Americas and in China with rice, you know, as well around the same time. But it's we're still adapting to how to make that fair and coexist. And now we have technology. And so we're still in this phase when and now I'm going to leap. And I might not make sense because my brain sometimes goes with 500 million miles per hour and I don't make sense when I speak. So
me too.
Please talk to me if that's because this is an imperfect communication device. But, and forgive me for going biblical, but this is all metaphorical. And truly, I think all religion is trying to tell us the same thing. You know, we were one, and then because we couldn't quite figure out how to live with each other, and we built the power of Babel because we were trying to grasp bigger and bigger things, God said, okay, now you speak so many different languages and you can't even understand each other. So what we're trying to aim towards is, again, to speak one language, to understand each other better. But in order to achieve that, we first have to figure out how to not constantly grasp, which is the same thou shalt not covet, aparigraha in Hinduism. All religions are trying to teach us, please do not grasp. And that spirituality, that oneness, takes me back to what you mentioned with Nietzsche, because that really kind of struck me in my heart. Your metaphor, and maybe you need to define it better, of looking into someone's eye, but then you finding your sheer aloneness. Anthony DeMello, again, I'm a fan. He passed away, but I'm a fan. He always talks about there's a difference between aloneness and solitude. And no matter, again, whether you're tapping into a Native American tradition, an African tradition, a Zen tradition, or a Christianity, Judeo-Christian tradition, they all say, be alone. That is the primary reason. Always go into a cave and meditate, sit and meditate, be and meditate, withdraw yourself from the world, go and hike up to a mountain, go into the wilderness. These things come back. They're just, our mythologies are flooded with it. It's our common ancestors from every culture, from every tradition telling us, don't be afraid. There is nothing bad about being alone. It's actually the birthplace of joy. It's the birthplace of peace. And once you can find peace and joy in solitude, then go out from the cave, then go out from your meditation room, then go out from the savannah and come back to society, because now you'll be functioning better. But what is modern psychology tells everyone, this is why sometimes psychology, I think, and spirituality is like in total clash with each other. Psychology is now flooding the airways that everybody who is in community is better. Community, 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 which is true. There's nothing untrue about that, except that now people are so afraid of being alone that they didn't do their fundamental, primary, very basic homework. Then you have to find just joyfulness in being alone. As long as there's conflict within you, you bring that conflict to your community. You want something from that community. You want the community to fix your problems. And that just creates more harm in the community. Whenever we want somebody else to fix the problem within us, we harm the other. So first, fix within, then go out, and then you don't have to grasp. You don't need anybody. As long as you need somebody, you're using them. As long as we need a community, we're using them. But once we enjoy the symphony with each other, now we're doing something creative instead of destructive. So I think I would pull us back to that fundamental. Let's peel all religions, let's peel all spiritualities back to that fundamental teachings that they all teach. Peace within. Meditate on that. And then bring peace forth without wanting anything from the other.
Yeah, I think that's a great place. I do want to draw attention to be at peace. I mean, in a very literal sense, the body is not peaceful. Mm-hmm. And this is some of the stuff that I've read along the lines of the awesome fact that, like, the whole purpose of that, as I understand it, is to be able to sit peacefully.
Yeah.
In order to do that, I don't know if the discomfort ever goes away, but it sure seems like there's excessive discomfort, in standing or sitting, mm-hmm. or anything. So to take that Yes. What you're saying, yes. Get it right. Get yourself right alone.
Yeah.
There's something about the body. Right? It's a foundational. Without the body, there's nothing. Get the body right.
Get it healthy. Remove the conflict within. And that doesn't mean that we're not still processing stuff, right? It's a, you never get it. It's like weeding your garden. Yeah. It's a constant stuff. But if you find conflict, how do you remove the conflict so when you engage with the universe, it's peaceful?
Yeah.
Because we try to fix instead of the structural basis of our spirit, we're trying to fix everything that's on top of it, that hundreds and hundreds of years of agriculture, revolution, societal structure, everything put on it. And now we have discussions of whether capitalism is good or socialism is good. But really, they all have their pros and cons, but they're all fighting at each other on a very superficial level. And they're all making these binary analyses where they're still taking one from the other. You know, in both cases, somebody wants to take something from the other in order to make something better, right? But as long as people have inner conflict and conflict with each other, they're just going to roll that conflict into no matter what system we have.
Yeah.
Change the system, but the people are the same, the system will collapse. Then you say, oh, the system was bad, so let's go reach for another system, but the people haven't changed, so that system will collapse as well. And we're just creating more and more chaos. And there's more and more of us in the world.
Yeah.
So just the sheer number of us on a world brings more kind of like ding, 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 ding. You don't have time to work this out much longer because our conflicts and our revolutions just have that much bigger effects.
Yeah. Okay. So I would love. I'm going to try one more time to end, and then I'm not going to open my mouth if you choose to rip on it. So the inverse of that is also true. Is how I feel, and this is a very hopeful message.
Oh, good.
So like what you and I are doing. Yes, I'm absolutely right. The perpetuation of the chaos as a consequence of the what was the word that you used within the conflict within it. Like the disharmony, I'll say, yeah. Within the disharmony within. Yes, I have an outsized capacity now to influence way more people than ever existed before.
Yes.
You know, in my own lifetime, there's been it's a parabolic function of just number of bodies walking around on a daily basis. And I can touch a whole bunch of them. So the same way that we talked mm-hmm. about, I'm touching your eardrum right now. This is the experimentation. This is the intent here is these are published, which means that, oh, it's not just you.
Yeah.
Okay. So the hopeful thing is, so this comes back to the building something creative and beautiful. If you and I can harmonize, I'll say, at that foundational level and build up mm-hmm. that same influence that you're talking about, that ability to influence massively mm-hmm. works harmoniously because the I'll just say vibration that is now broadcast is actually one of harmonization.
Yeah.
Of redemption of all of that. The noise, like, because another part of me says, oh my gosh, what an enormous opportunity. Like, there's more people now to be creative together than there ever has been before. What happens if all of a sudden I think about there's a story about the first time Led Zeppelin got together, you know, and they just jam for a few minutes and then they're just grinning their faces off looking at each other because they're like, oh my gosh, we just touched something that is so profound. So to be able to, you don't know, you're just experimenting, they're goofing off.
Yeah.
They're just playing, there's some discipline, there's structure, there's real music.
Yeah.
There's a discipline in life. You have to be able to actually play. But if you can play, and you can hit the chord, you can hit that moment of harmony, I think that just naturally draws attention.
Yeah. And, you know, that's why we're doing this, is that hopefully there is more balance in the universe, and also hopefully we get this message out that by leaning into the discomfort, we can learn and not shelter back to I'm right, you're wrong, but actually open up into learning. Yeah. Learning and being curious and walking our way into the future with hopefully a little more peace. On that note.
Thanks, Dora.
Thank you.